surgery is your turning point, not your end point, and you need a holistic long-term management plan for after surgery.
You've just tuned in to Rebel Wellness. I'm your host, Kaylee, also known as Coach Kales, integrative clinical nutritionist in training, fitness pro of over a decade, and the woman who refused to accept normal when my body was screaming otherwise. If you're the high achiever who's been told your blood work is perfect while you're secretly Googling why you feel like garbage, if you're crushing it at work but your energy crashes at 3 p.m. and your cycle just feels off, or maybe you've been gaslit by providers who dismiss your symptoms as just stress, and you know something deeper is going on, you're my people. Here's where functional medicine meets real talk strategy. I created this podcast as your resource to take back the driver's seat on your health journey. Women are incredibly intuitive, and I'm here to help you reconnect with that voice. This isn't about perfection or another protocol to fail at. It's about finally getting the answers your body has been begging for and the tools that actually work in your real, messy, beautiful life. Less noise, more nourishment. Let's dive in. Just a quick note before we get started. So everything Dr. Kushner and I talk about today is for educational purposes only. It's not medical advice, and it's definitely not a substitute for working with your own healthcare provider. If you have questions about your health symptoms or treatment options, please talk to a qualified professional who knows your personal history. Welcome back, Rebels. Today, I have a really special discussion I have been waiting to share with you guys. This is a topic that I think many of us have heard of more now, I would say, thanks to social media and a little bit more exposure. But I would say that it's unfortunately something that is not new, but is very behind on research and better understanding this situation that many women are dealing with. So if you are somebody who's ever been told that your debilitating period pain is just part of being a woman, you know, or you simply are told to just pop some ibuprofen and put a hot pack on and push through your period, this episode is for you because we might want to discuss your severely uncomfortable periods because they are not normal. Just because they're common doesn't mean they're normal. I hope that you've been hearing that phrase a little bit more on the health side of social media or through discussions, hopefully with your practitioners, because, you know, unfortunately, most conventional medicine usually says, oh, it's common, so it's fine. And that's not the right way to look at it, which is exactly what my guest today, Kimberly Kushner, and I get to discuss. So we're going to be diving deep into endometriosis, this condition that affects roughly 1 in 10 women, but still takes an average of 7 to 12 years to diagnose. Let that sink in. That's a decade of being dismissed, gaslit, told your pain isn't real, whatever it is. I hear you. I have been there with many of my female clients trying to get them properly diagnosed, and I've only started learning about it more. I remember hearing about it when I was finishing my degree, in my 4-year degree, and a classmate of mine in my anatomy class actually did a project on it because we were supposed to pick a disease or disorder or syndrome and to kind of expand on it. And I had no idea about endometriosis literally until that moment. So, like I said, I'm joined by Kimberly Kushner, a naturopath who specializes in endometriosis in today's chat, and she brings something really rare to this conversation. So I was really excited that we got to have her on the show. She's lived it herself. For nearly 25 years, Kimberly has navigated her own endo journey from her first period at 11 and immediately experiencing those severe symptoms, undergoing excision surgery in 2012, and now being in remission while helping other women find their path forward and carrying her own babies. So what we're going to explore in today's episode, we're going to dive deep into the stuff that your doctor probably didn't tell you, because this is why we have these discussions, why those endometrial-like cells may have been deposited in your utero. It's always hard for me to say in utero. Before you were even born is what that means. And what it means for your life is it's just lifestyle narrative is, you know, we want to look at that through a different lens. The 5 pillars that are actually moving the needle for your health and for your endometriosis situation, because it's never just about the hormones. Why your pain perception might be hardwired after years of symptoms, and the nervous system work that surgery alone just can't really touch. So we also get into the crucial difference between ablation and excision surgery, which I think is really important for modern understanding of navigating your endometriosis, why a hysterectomy won't cure your endo unless you also have adenomyosis, and the gut-endo connection that shows up in nearly every patient that Kimberly sees. So we also get into fertility real talk, which is awesome because I think that we need to understand that it's not a death sentence for your potential of a fertility journey, unlike what some practitioners may be telling you. So Kimberly's own journey in conceiving her three boys naturally after surgery, why male factor matters a lot more than we've been told, and the surprising link between endo and conditions like POTS, EDS, and MCAS. And something you guys will really want to stick around to hear is the three biggest mistakes that Kimberly sees women doing that keep them stuck on their endometriosis healing journey. Because the truth bomb of this whole thing is that surgery is your turning point, not your end point. So you'll want to hear why we talk about that and what she has to offer you guys as some really amazing understanding and knowledge from her own personal experience. So if you are somebody who's been struggling for years with endometriosis, feeling defeated, or maybe you've been wondering if you have endometriosis and if you'll ever feel normal again, if you do, this message of today's podcast episode is really clear. Your body is wired to heal. You just need to remove the obstacles and find the right support. So this isn't about perfection. It's not about doing all the things perfectly. It's about understanding that endometriosis is complex, multifaceted, and requires more than a one-size-fits-all approach. So give yourself permission to advocate fiercely for yourself, to travel for better care if needed, to try the unconventional routes, even if somebody in conventional sides says it's not going to work, and trust your gut when something doesn't feel right. That's some of the biggest underlying tones of today's episode. And I'm really excited for you guys to learn a lot more. Hopefully this will be a helpful and insightful listen for you today. All right, let's get into it with endonaturopath Kimberly Kushner. All right, Kimberly, thank you so much for taking the time to be on our episode today on endometriosis. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I'd love to dive right into knowing a little bit about like how you came to specialize in endometriosis and like what's your personal connection to this work?
Yeah, of course. So when I first started getting my periods at the age of 11, I was extremely shocked. I was frightened. I was not expecting what I was experiencing. I was in a lot of pain. I was experiencing classic endo symptoms from the onset of my periods, and I was dealing with them all throughout high school and through my years of study after school in university. I was studying to be a nutritionist and a naturopath, and so I was very much drawn to complementary and alternative medicine, functional medicine. And I knew that I wanted to focus on women's health, but endo just shaped so much of my own story that there was no denying that this is the population and the demographic that I'm supposed to serve, because it was such a foundational part of what shaped me as a person and as a practitioner. So I've been dealing with symptoms for the last almost 25 years, although I would say these days I'm pretty much in remission, which is amazing. I've had one surgery, proper excision done well, back in 2012. And so it's been a long time since then. And I've been able to kind of successfully manage without having to go back and get repeated surgery. Not that there's anything wrong if anyone has to do that. But yeah, having the knowledge as a health practitioner and having this as part of my own story and shaping me has really drawn me into this space to serve women with endo. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. I think that sometimes even what I've been finding for my own, you know, transition into focus of different niches, it's really like when you've gone through it yourself, you can really understand it from a different depth. And so I think that though it's unfortunate you yourself had to go through endometriosis and whatnot, I think now you're a resource for more women. And, you know, everyone listening to this podcast is going to benefit from that experience as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So when, you know, you talk about that experience when you started your period, you know, from my understanding, you know, and we'll kind of come back around to having you just define for our listeners what exactly is endometriosis as a diagnosis. But I have heard that, you know, a lot of times we tend to experience endometriosis like pains immediately once, you know, that estrogen spikes when we go through puberty. Is there some truth to that, or how does that work?
I do see a lot of patients who have experienced the same thing as me, where from the onset of menarche or their very first period, they're experiencing symptoms. So absolutely there is truth to that. But then you also see many other women who don't experience symptoms until far later in life. So that's the thing with endo. We don't know the exact cause. There are multiple postulated theories out there. However, working in this space, I definitely think it's a combination of factors. You know, there is a theory that these endo cells have been laid down in the baby girl from in utero. And, you know, for example, if that's what happened in someone like myself, that surge in hormones at puberty could be the triggering thing that kind of switches it on in combination with a variety of other factors like immune dysfunction and other genetics and chronic inflammation and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. It's toxin exposure. Yeah. Okay. So that's interesting. And you brought up the big topic of us understanding a little more now that those endometrial cells can be deposited. Can you expand on that?
It's found in newborn babies. So yeah, in the development of a baby girl in utero, the cells can be laid down, and something later in life can switch it on. And it can be a variety of these things and an accumulation of things. You know, like you said, toxin exposure. There is links with generational toxin exposure. Like, what's the mother been exposed to, even grandmothers? So there are so many factors to this. So many variables.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that's important because I have seen some people, like, since it's kind of a hot topic as well on, you know, health side of social media, since unfortunately so many women are struggling with endometriosis and are now getting a name for it, that, you know, similar to some aspects of PCOS, people think that, like, oh, well, endometriosis is a lifestyle thing, you know, and we're finding out that's absolutely not right. It starts genetically, and it can either present or not present, and it can be managed better through lifestyle, but it's not caused directly by lifestyle, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing, we don't really know. You know, they're saying, oh, there's an element of retrograde menstruation, and if that's true, how is lifestyle causing retrograde menstruation? Like, that's something we can't really control, but definitely lifestyle factors can either help you manage better or can worsen the way you experience endometriosis. I know that for a
fact. Absolutely.
Yeah, there's no sugar.
Can you let our... Oh, sorry.
Sorry. No, I was just saying there's no sugarcoating that. But at the same time, I don't want people to think that that's disempowering. I want people to realize that that is actually empowering. There are things that we can do. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. But there are things we can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything easy is not always the best for us.
Well, that's most what I say. You know, easy. We've been dealt a difficult hand here with endo. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Can you explain to the listeners a little bit about what retrograde menstruation is? That's something I recently learned about.
Period that instead of exiting out of the vaginal canal, it's going upwards and backwards in through your fallopian tubes and going into the pelvic and abdominal cavity. So there are theories that say that is what causes endometriosis. But then you go, how is that the case in girls who have never had a period before and then are very symptomatic? And that's when other theories come in. So,
So it's kind of like it could be a mixed bag, like for different people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And from kind of bridging the gap between clinical and extremely casual, how would you describe what exactly is endometriosis?
Yeah. So there is endometrial cells that line our inner lining of our uterus called the endometrium. Now, endometriosis is not just this endometrium that is found in other places in the body. It's tissue which resembles...
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
The endometrium, which is like the endometrium that is found outside, you know, outside the uterus, which is, it can be on your ovaries, it can be on your bowel, it can be on your bladder, it can be on your pelvic ligaments. It's like the endometrium, but it's not exactly the same. It behaves differently, it functions differently too.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's endometrial-like tissue that's deposited around the body. And they found it as it can grow in your nose, lungs. So it's not just confined to the reproductive organs or the abdomen.
Okay. Yeah. And it's just usually we feel it the most because of the oncoming of menses and whatnot when that inflammation comes around.
Yeah, absolutely. So really bad period pain, bowel issues, ovulation pain, pain with intercourse. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. And so there's the really common, we kind of mentioned lightly already, but the most common situation is that women who will experience debilitating period pain will go to their doctor, and either their doctor will just kind of brush it off or say, maybe change your lifestyle, eat a Mediterranean diet. That's the one that I always kind of giggle about from the nutrition side, which I'm sure you can relate, which is important. It's a very important diet and it has some things, but it's not as easy as the blank, throw that fire.
I've never had a doctor recommend the Mediterranean diet to me.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Oh, here. I mean, it would be amazing. It would be amazing if it was recommended commonly, but unfortunately along my journey, I've never had a conventional medical doctor recommend the Mediterranean diet to me.
That's so interesting. Yeah. And for everybody listening, Kimberly is in Australia. So it is kind of fun to get a little bit of a mix of from her conventional system and our conventional system, I guess.
Yeah.
But so often a lot of my clients, when we're trying to get a diagnosis for endo, when we suspect it, we hear a lot of go on birth control. Essentially, can you speak to a little bit about that, why that's a thing, and then what's a better option?
Yeah, so it's just recommended as common treatment because your birth control will assist in suppressing symptoms by suppressing hormonal fluctuations, by suppressing your menstrual cycle, and you don't get a period if you're on the pill, and therefore you would probably. Well, it would be expected that your symptoms would be lessened, but it doesn't actually prevent the growth and the spread. And we know that endo can damage organs. We know that it can impair fertility. So, I know many women who are on forms of hormonal therapy and birth control for endo to manage. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it shouldn't be the only thing that you're doing because endometriosis mm-hmm. involves so much more than your hormones. And the birth mm-hmm. control approach is predominantly, it is addressing the hormonal aspect, solely the hormonal aspect.
Solely, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so kind of expanding on that, actually, can you talk a little bit more about what the entire ecosystem is outside of just hormones? Because I know most of the time people just hear, estrogen dominance, therefore endometriosis. And it's not chicken or the egg like that.
Yeah.
All the time.
So I always say, yes, the hormonal aspect is a big part of it, that we need to focus on supporting estrogen metabolism, detoxification, ensuring we're getting ample ovulation and good levels of progesterone that we're making. Again, if you're on birth control, like the pill to suppress ovulation, you will not be making progesterone. And progesterone has some really wonderful properties. So it can act as an anti-estrogenic, it can act as an anti-inflammatory, it can help with moods, anxiety, so on and so forth. So that's another thing. If you are suppressing your cycles, you're going to be compromising progesterone. You're not going to be exposing your body to that. So I always say there are multiple pillars involved when we're looking at endometriosis. So you've got your hormones, you've got your immune system. There's a dysfunctional immune system. So certain immune cells have gone rogue. Immune cells that are meant to be on watch are not doing their job properly. And these endometrial cells that have, you know, gone astray are now implanting in different locations and getting past these immune surveillance cells. There is the microbiome. There's more and more research coming out around the microbiome and its role in modulating the immune system in endometriosis. So both the gut microbiome and the reproductive microbiome. And I always look at the nervous system. So I'm big on the nervous system and how it impacts our pain perception and how we perceive, how we experience endo in our body, because so many of us are hardwired to promote these pain signals because we've been stuck in them for so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, that was something that I was also hearing about and reading some research on earlier this year when a couple more of my clients had gotten diagnosed with endometriosis. And it's around the bacterial contamination hypothesis, correct? Like the gut microbiome component?
Yeah, so they're drawing some ties between certain microbes and how they affect your immune system and pathways that are involved in the proliferation and spread of endo.
Yeah. I thought that angle was the most interesting. I think it is really overwhelming about just how much the gut microbiome impacts our health. And I was just talking to somebody the other day because it was, I think it was Socrates that said the all disease begins and ends in the gut kind of thing. And it's like funny because it's like 2,000 years ago.
Yeah. Yes, like it is
old, but valid.
So relevant, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think so kind of like to what you were saying, there's a pretty strong, would you say with the patients that you work with endometriosis and even for yourself, that strong connection between IBS and endometriosis?
Yeah, absolutely. Almost every single endo patient I see has some gut issues. And whether it be, you know, diagnosed as IBS as well as endo, or even endo misdiagnosed as IBS. I had my first colonoscopy and gastroscopy at the ripe old age of 15 because I had such severe gut issues. Yeah, and was diagnosed with IBS and was put on 2 gut meds at the age of 15 for years.
Oh my God.
Plus birth control from about 14 or 15. So regardless of whether you have endo on the bowel or not, you can definitely still present with IBS-like symptoms.
Yeah. Okay. And speaking of that, actually, let's kind of differentiate between just, you know, normal symptoms that somebody might have for like a bad period or something like that versus like endometriosis type of periods and other symptoms that might.
Yes, you can have primary dysmenorrhea where dysmenorrhea means period pain. Primary dysmenorrhea without endo, you know, or you can have endo, and some women have endo without period pain, which makes things even more complicated, you know. Sometimes women have this thing called silent endo, which I don't believe is silent at all, where, you know, their only symptom may be that they struggle to conceive. So there's really no rhyme and reason to it. And that's when I start getting deep into like, oh, what's going on with her nervous system versus her nervous system? If she's riddled with endo, but she has no symptoms, why is she wired to not feel it? Which is a whole other fascinating, like there could be so many interesting studies just based on the questions that go through my head every day about all this.
Totally.
Your period should not be interfering with your daily activity. It should not have you, you know, feeling in agonizing pain. It should not be causing, you know, severe constipation in the lead up and then diarrhea during. It should not be wiping you of energy. You should not have to cancel days in your calendar because of your period. That is not normal. You know, a little bit of cramping is fine, but it shouldn't interfere with your day-to-day life.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that that's the biggest one that I've, that's triggered me to be like, have you looked into Indo? Because I've had a client before where she is like period pad, like hot pad on her for like 3 days, which we're later learning that like you shouldn't be putting heat on it for too long, right? But it's hard because you don't know, because you want something that's soothing. And so what are some things in regards to managing those symptoms in like real time that you tend to recommend or have had help you?
Okay, great question. I think that firstly, I want to say there is no shame in requiring medication for pain. If you have, you know, if you have to get through that day and you have to get through that day and you need to take your paracetamol and ibuprofen, you do that. But if you are having like a rest day and you want to look into other ways to managing your symptom, obviously heat. I find water really helpful, like getting in the shower, getting in the bath, massage and counter pressure. So pressing into your lower back, certain pressure points around your sacrum, around your hips, legs, even feet, like reflexology, you know, rolling your foot on like a tennis ball. I don't know if you know what a Shakti mat is, but they're the mats that have like the little spikes. So even just laying on that, but even movement, like distracting your body with movement, even just like sitting on your bed and rocking your pelvis or sitting cross-legged and just closing your eyes and doing circles. I'm big into like somatic therapies and nervous system stuff, just in case you haven't picked up by now. But I think that's so important because I always ask people, how do you respond to fear? How do you respond to pain? Or how do you respond to the symptom when it first starts? Are you catastrophizing it? Like, because we have experienced the worst of the worst. We've experienced the thing that's landed us in the emergency department only to be sent home and been told, you know, you're fine. So that sensation evokes that anxiety, evokes the fear, it evokes that spiral. So I always say, you know, welcome it with curiosity or meet it with curiosity and see where it goes. Just observe it and see what happens and then do these things. Herbal medicines that I really like. Cramp bark is a good one. Corydalis, Jamaican dogwood, curcumin. You can experiment with proteolytic enzymes like nattokinase, serrapeptase. I'm sure there are others. But these aren't, some of them can be like in the moment thing, but they're not, they may not necessarily work like a painkiller. It's almost like, a combination of some of these herbs I do recommend as like an acute remedy. But then you also have to work on the background chronic inflammation that's happening. You got to work on that. Your immune system and that chronic inflammation, the nervous system, all of that. So if you want to try those herbs, you can try those herbs with, you know, touch therapy, somatic therapy, breathing, breath work, nervous system stuff, high dose omega-3s to help with that background chronic inflammation, but that won't happen instantly. That's going to take like, a couple menstrual cycles. I always say, give it 3 menstrual cycles because we want things to start, you know, taking effect. And then, your acute remedies can work in the moment and like then and there. But usually when you're working on calming systemic inflammation and supporting estrogen clearance, encouraging progesterone increase, that's going to take a few cycles. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important for everyone to understand is that, I mean, similar to why your doctor usually says, let's try this for 3 months. It's like our body moves in like a healing 90-day cycle all the time. And so really committing at least to 3 months is how you can tell whether or not your body is responding to it well,
and
right?
It's hard. I get it, because you will have you will have the symptomatic days, but the goal is to have to reduce the intensity of those symptomatic days, and then reduce the bad days and increase your good days. And then here and there, you might have an odd day here or there where you're really quite symptomatic. But then you look back and you go, hang on, like, I used to have pain every single day. And now I'm only experiencing pain when I'm ovulating or the first couple days of my period. That's a huge win.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So. And it's one of those things where it's like, once you're starting to feel that, and then you look back at it and you're like, okay, no, things are moving forward. You know, we always kind of want to Amazon Prime our health, and it's kind of like, well, this is like you had said.
We want
it's a lifelong journey.
Yeah. And the climate of everything today, everything is rushed and the world doesn't wait for us. And, you know, people have commitments and they have to work and this and that. And I get that. And that's where medication and surgery can be really beneficial.
Yeah.
But I still highly recommend doing all the other things, because surgery and medication is not enough if you want to manage it thoroughly for the long run.
Yes. And have like lasting change.
I always say that your surgery is your turning point. It's not your end point. Because I meet people all the time who say, oh, you know, I finally got my diagnosis. I got my surgery and now here I am. And I'm not saying that they didn't do the things, but in many cases, it's almost like, and it's not no one's fault, because we are sometimes conditioned to think that surgery is the answer.
Yeah, I'm not good.
So we expect it to kind of end our symptoms. But endo is not curable, unfortunately, in that sense.
Yeah. And then, I think that I've heard from a few clients that have mentioned like, oh, the surgery thing, or their doctors want to do this or that. Mm-hmm. And like you said, there's certain procedures, which I'd like to ask you about that in a moment. But they've usually been told, like, sometimes from their doctors, especially very old fashioned, depending on where you are, at least for here in the US, based off of like how up to date their doctors are in their medical system and their state. But sometimes they'll just say, oh, let's just do a hysterectomy, you know, and that's like life changing surgery for any woman, you know. And so with that said, what is this type? Is there a certain like name or a few different surgeries that like are the best that you've seen work?
So excision is always superior, because it involves removing the endometriosis lesions from the root, literally cutting it out. There are other surgical techniques which involve burning off the endo on the surface, and that's just leaving the root in and not taking it out. So it's really important to find a surgeon who can perform excision and is confident at performing excision. Now, you mentioned a hysterectomy, and I understand the desperation. I really do.
Yeah.
I understand the desperation for relief. However, unless you have adenomyosis, the hysterectomy will not cure your endo. And if you've been told that, you've been sold a lie. And I have met many women who have had endometriosis without adenomyosis, who have had a hysterectomy, partial, because they've been quite young. So just removing the uterus, not removing the ovaries, and leaving the endo without excising the endo at all. So they're left with their uterus is removed. They're not having periods anymore. So if that's going to give you some symptom relief, then that's good. But the endo has not been removed. Women are still, I have patients who have hysterectomies and are still bleeding vaginally, because they have endo either on the vaginal cuff or somewhere, and it's still causing bleeding. So, you know, this needs to change. This is not okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you're going to get a hysterectomy, at least get a laparoscopy at the same time, where you are going to get the endo removed, because otherwise, you know, what's the point? You're just Yeah, no periods anymore. And I get it. So it is a cure for adenomyosis. It is a definite cure for adenomyosis, which is a condition which is similar to endometriosis, but it's embedded in the myometrium. So in the uterine muscle itself. And that, the only sure way to deal with that, get rid of it, is to remove the uterus. So yes, a hysterectomy will fix that, but it's not going to fix your endo.
Okay. How often do you usually see adenomyosis with endometriosis
all
and then standalone? All the time?
Okay. Oh, all the time. Yeah.
When's a circumstance when they would just have adenomyosis standalone?
So I have seen that in patients who have not yet had a laparoscopy to see whether they have endo or not. So they've had imaging, like a ultrasound, which has shown adenomyosis, and then they have the symptoms of both adeno and endo, you know, heavy, painful periods, pain with intercourse, bloating, distended belly, bowel issues, et cetera, et cetera. And they may not opt for surgery. So at that point, we know that they just have adeno. They probably have endo too, but they're not getting the surgery because of whatever reason. And then we just work on the adeno, which we deal with them the same way, basically, from a naturopathic perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're pretty similar route.
Yeah.
Essentially, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And with those symptoms kind of laid out, thank you for sharing about that, because I think the discussion about like how to operate on it literally is definitely muddied for some reason still. But when,
because there is no gold standard for endo.
Yeah, definitely.
So do your do your due diligence, do your research, find the best surgeon for you, and yeah, trust your instinct also.
Yeah.
Because many of us have been, you know, dismissed for so long. You kind of know in your gut when you meet a good practitioner that you feel comfortable with and that you trust, and who knows what they're doing and what they're talking about. So, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And it is something where, you know, it's definitely encouraged. At least I know I've encouraged, and I think on some of your past posts, I've seen that you have even traveled to see different practitioners that you resonate more with or that you trust, because sometimes those procedures are really important to
get
the right care, right?
Oh, yeah. So absolutely. I'm very much, I mean, I totally understand that it's not feasible for everyone to do this. However, you know, in the States, a lot of my patients do travel for care anyway, go from state to state. I think that's relatively common, given, you know, like if you have a set of conditions and you really need to see the specialist who niches in the niche. So,
yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Which that is a huge thing, especially because there's a lot of generalists out here, especially with people wanting to mainly go through insurance, you know, of course, especially because a lot of these procedures cost a lot out of pocket. Yeah.
And that's another thing. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why, you know, a lot of women still aren't receiving the care that they genuinely need because of those hurdles.
Absolutely. Yeah. When it comes to ways for them to advocate for themselves, if you feel like, if you're somebody listening and you're like, I feel like this resonates, I feel like I probably have endo, what would you say is your best kind of list of things for somebody to go through?
So I ended up at a point where I was 12 years to get a diagnosis. So I totally understand. I totally understand the challenges and the difficulty. And, you know, after you've been from doctor to doctor to doctor, and no one's mentioned endo, but you present so typically. Use your resources. You know, if you're online, it's our world's just, you know, like I said, if you have a set of conditions and you need the practitioner who is that niche practitioner in a niche, there really aren't many of them around. And hopefully they will be the ones that will listen to you and will treat you properly. So, the internet's a great place nowadays. We can use it to our advantage in terms of researching the right, you know, whoever you need to see, whether it be a surgeon or a family physician or a pelvic floor therapist or a naturopath or a nutritionist or whoever that specializes in dealing with endo and endo's companion diseases. But yeah, I always say, you know, bring someone you trust with you that has your back, because it can be extremely overwhelming to go, especially if it's a new appointment, right? If you're a new patient, you're about to see someone, you've probably, you know, write down a list of things. I've done this many times, but I end up rehearsing what I'm going to say because you have this doctor, you almost have this like, it's hard to explain, but it's almost like you have this fear straight away of rejection or fear of being dismissed because you've been through it so many times. So it's like, okay, I have to get this right. So write everything down, research your questions, bring in all your imaging, bring someone you trust, and just come armed and prepared. And, you know, don't stop advocating for yourself.
Definitely. Yeah, I think that's really good advice because there's a lot of doctors that, especially too, when you said like, well, I looked up online. So it's like sometimes there's like, we maybe have ChatGPT tell you how to not say I used Google University, but even though there's a lot you can learn. But yeah, I think that that's a really great way to kind of come into something, especially when, you know, sometimes you can be I'm not sure what the term would exactly be, but basically when doctors kind of overpower you with kind of their expertise in a way, and sometimes they do sometimes feel too like they're just kind of sitting down, rushing. What's your problem? What's going on? Can I give you something for that? Okay, go home, you know, and sometimes it's like that. And
it's tough. Yeah. And I would also research the specialist. So if it's a endo excision surgeon that you're after, research the specialist, research the person you do want to go see. So in Australia, the system is that you need to see your primary care and then they refer you to the specialist you need to see. But if you don't want them deciding who you are to go see and you want to go see the specialist that you want to see, then you could propose, you know, this is the person that I want a referral to. So like I said, do your due diligence, research the surgeons, and then go see your primary care, and then they know who to refer you to.
Yeah.
But again, that's a lot of work on the patient, and it's hard, especially if you're feeling awful.
Yeah.
So I get it. I really do.
Yeah.
It's a full-time job being chronically ill, I'll tell you that.
Yes. It is. You kind of pretty much have to be your own Sherlock Holmes in a way.
Plus the admin and the transport and the funds and your meds and everything. It's tough. It really is.
Yes, really tough. And what are some red flags that you've seen with, like, especially throughout your experience, when somebody's experiencing a new doctor and they're trying to talk to them about it, what would you say is like a red flag to maybe go and find another practitioner to explore?
So if you're very symptomatic and have all the symptoms and you want to get surgery and do at least an exploratory laparoscopy to see if endo's in there, although I wouldn't recommend just doing an exploratory lap. If you're already under general anesthesia and you're under the knife, you might as well do the exploratory lap and excision at the same time if they find anything, rather than do excision at a later stage. So if you have the symptoms and you're seeing your specialist and they reject you, then that's a red flag. Or just get you on hormonal suppression. That's a red flag. Hormonal suppression without being open to doing more investigation, whether that be, you know, because you can do really quite sophisticated imaging these days for endo, like really, really good MRIs. There are sonographers that are trained to also look for endo. So red flag is just hormonally suppressed without doing other investigations. And then, rejecting you if you don't, if you know, if they say you're not a candidate for an endo surgery despite being incredibly symptomatic.
Yeah, totally. It would be so frustrating and disappointing to be that person who probably is like, no, I'm like really having this pain, you know, and to be told like, no. So,
and the other thing is fertility. So, you know, there are many fertility specialists out there who fortunately are very aware of endometriosis. So if they know you have endo, hopefully, or if they suspect you have endo, red flag would be not to go hard on IVF until more investigations are done, because IVF can worsen endometriosis.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Especially with like the hormonal therapy.
Absolutely.
Driven version.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Versus the natural cycle version for anyone listening.
IVF can definitely worsen your endo. So if you've got all the symptoms and you've been trying to conceive unsuccessfully, a red flag for me would be pushing IVF without doing the investigations.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great to point out as well. Which, speaking of that, if you're willing to share a little bit, I know you have kiddos. How was your fertility journey, especially since you obviously have endometriosis?
Yes, happy to share. So thankfully, I had my my surgery when I was quite young, and I was able to conceive naturally within a year of the surgery, which is wonderful. And pregnancy and birth and postpartum is a whole other story with a whole other set of challenges. But in terms of conceiving, after I had my surgery, I was very proactive at, you know, optimizing hormones, doing the things I mentioned before, immune system, nervous system, inflammation, all of that, and was able to conceive. So I've got three boys. So after my first, I became quite ill with a condition called POTS and dysautonomia. Don't know if anybody listening is familiar with that, but that is a whole other part of my health journey. So there was quite a big gap between my first and my second. But again, I was able to conceive naturally, but had issues with pregnancy, had issues postpartum, probably not related to endo, more related to the POTS and the hypermobility. And then again, third baby, third son, was able to conceive. The issues were more, in our case, was male factor fertility issues. So sperm health and poor sperm health, which also is a whole other conversation when it comes to fertility, is the men's health issues. So, we had to work a lot on that for number two and number three, but we got there. So
that's great. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, and I think that discussion about the male fertility needs to be had more and more, so that women know that that is a huge factor that before used to be kind of brushed off. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I actually had a discussion with one of my clients who's in his mid-80s, and he was telling me about his first wife and their fertility. And I was like, oh, you know, like, did they ever look into your sperm health and this or that? And he's like, no, I'm sure that probably was a part of it.
Yeah.
It's totally different nowadays, you know, because she went off and got married again and had a baby with the next. So that's what prompted me to think like, oh, did they look into yours at all?
Yeah.
But it was okay. He did not want kids. So it worked out for him.
There you go.
But yeah, I think more women need to know that there is a sperm factor that is
100%.
In your, I feel like we have a future episode, I would love to have you back to talk about like the mast cell activation syndrome and like the POTS and kind of the unique thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think there's a lot of stuff that women live with symptoms of, which I'm sure you did and didn't know what to look into, except that you were becoming an, I mean, you're a natural doctor, so you're more aware, right?
Yes. But, POTS, EDS, mast cell, hypermobility. And many women with endo also have those companion conditions. So,
definitely.
It's gaining a lot more traction now, which is really exciting. But for a long time, it was very isolating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was probably one of those things that was written off as mania.
Yeah, or anxiety. POTS equals anxiety. It's like, well, of course you're going to be anxious if your heart's like beating at 100 beats per minute just standing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And with the endometriosis, is there a connection to kind of like the genetic mutation of the MTHFR? I know you talk about it a little bit on your social media.
Yeah. So we don't know if it, like, obviously we can't say, you know, MTHFR is linked to endo or causes endo or has a role in the causative factors of endo, but it affects the way that we detoxify our hormones. So
exactly.
It can, yeah. So you require methylation for hormone detoxification pathways, toxin detoxification, neurotransmitter production. And if these pathways are compromised due to impaired or reduced methylation, and you have endo, it's going to potentially worsen your symptoms. So yeah, I guess that's the link there. So in anyone with an MTHFR genetic mutation, we want to ensure that your methylation pathways are supported, running smoothly, especially if you have this predisposition to be estrogen dominant and very kind of estrogenic. So that's important.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's kind of a good segue into talking about, so since you're obviously on the more of the integrative care approach with the naturopathic medicine and such, how do you, what's your kind of usual intake? Like, what do you start with, functional tests and your nutrition approach? You know, those kind of good advice.
Yeah. That's so good
advice.
I just want to say that everybody is managed differently based on their presentation. However, majority of people will have very, very similar initial things to work with, right? And that's the things I mentioned before. It always will cover these pillars: hormones, inflammation, nervous system, microbiome, immune dysfunction. And then how it presents in the person will determine what we do. I always say a good practitioner will not, I mean, what did we do before accessing these fancy functional medicine tests? We were, you know, thoroughly taking the case. We understood the person. And that's the beauty of naturopathic medicine, is we still treat you as a whole, regardless of your label, regardless of what your test results say, we still go back to you as a person. And then we have these wonderful modalities that we can, you know, strip it back to. We can use food as medicine, nutritional therapy, herbal medicine, movement, you know, breathing, lymphatic drainage, even all this like nervous system and somatic therapy stuff, which is super cool. But I always say to my patients, it's absolutely not necessary to go get all the fancy functional testing done if you want to work together. So I do love the Dutch test. I love a good gut microbiome test. Mm-hmm. Organic acids is great. You know, if they want to do hair tissue mineral analysis, great. But is it absolutely necessary? Probably not, because there's always going to be things that stick out in someone's case that we can, you know, hit the ground running and start working on, you know, chronic inflammation, supporting estrogen detoxification, calming down that overactive nervous system, getting them back into a parasympathetic state if they're in this hypervigilant, sympathetic, dominant overdrive. And that in and of itself is going to be, you know, the landscape and the background that you need for physical healing to occur.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's the foundations that, you know, when you were talking earlier about supplements and stuff, kind of coming back around to that, it's that none of that stuff really can touch it if you're not doing those foundational things you just talked about, right?
So yeah. So if you're constantly feeling unsafe in your body, you're constantly scanning for danger, you're feeling a twinge and you're spiraling, you are hypervigilant. Yeah. And there's going to be major roadblocks that you're going to hit. We can try and, you know, iron out the kinks with your methylation pathway and your gut and this and that. But it's a two-way street, you know, what's in your organs is talking to your nervous system. And then there's the signals from your nervous system that's talking to your organs. So yeah, really need to focus on helping you feel safer in your body, because it's been such a, you know, for most people, it's been such an unpleasant experience being in a body that, you know, has been experiencing so much pain and discomfort. And then there are layers on top of that, like, you know, the disappointments with fertility challenges and traumas and so on and so forth. So it's very complex. And this is what I mean. There's so much that surgery cannot do.
Definitely. Especially because females also kind of, because we have a tendency to like feel so much deeper, access compassion quicker, and empathy, you know, and all these kind of things. Sometimes we kind of underestimate how much we store it in our body as well. And
through
certain traumas.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And there are definitely clear links with trauma and chronic pelvic pain. So
Yeah, definitely. When it comes to the different nutrition approaches, what are some like non-negotiables that you usually like to do, at least when somebody's in, before they are in more of a remissive state?
Yeah, so there, the baseline is always an anti-inflammatory lifestyle and diet approach. And that often means, you know, stripping off ultra-processed foods, adding in lots of color, antioxidants, good fats, fiber. And then on top of that, we might layer a lower histamine diet approach on top, which I find works really well, because a lot of women with endo find that histamine is a big trigger for their symptoms. So anti-inflammatory as a baseline, and then low histamine on top of that, or depending on their unique food intolerances, we tweak it.
For antihistamine foods, you know, kind of what I usually think of initially is like fermented foods can often carry a lot of histamines, right? Even thicker skinned fruits like bananas and avocado tend to have more histamine, as well as what are some other things?
Yeah, just for like really common histamine triggers. So there are higher histamine foods, and then there are foods that suppress diamine oxidase, which is the enzyme that breaks down histamine. So it compromises your ability to break down histamine, which also act as like histamine liberators because they prevent the breakdown. Bananas, pineapple, kiwi fruit, strawberries. These are like your more common triggers. All your fermented foods, aged cheeses. Basically, the longer something has been processed, the more aged something is, the higher the histamine content. So like your cured meats, for example.
Wine.
Red wine. Red wine's a big one. Yeah.
Yes. Which is a lot of people get disappointed to hear.
Yeah. So I have that conversation a lot. I'm like, tequila is actually low in histamine. So some people have gone, okay, I'll ditch my wine and have tequila. All alcohol is going to compromise your liver function, detoxification ability, neurotransmitters, inflammation, gut health, food, sleep, so on and so forth.
Yes, there's not really a good place for alcohol in a healing protocol, that's for sure.
Yes, that's true.
Sadly. But it's important to know it is a poison. That's why it has its effects.
That's true. That is very true.
Yeah. So for you, what you offer, like what are services that you offer to patients that have endometriosis? Like what do they usually come to you for in their care journey?
As in my naturopathic support?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a endo program called Endo Harmony, and it's either 4 months or 6 months support with option to continue on afterwards. And it involves my, you know, weekly support in small groups. I also do one-on-one support in the program, depending on which tier of support they come and join me in. But they have access to my EndoHarmony course portal for life, which is pretty cool because it's continuously getting upgraded. It's got all your diet downloads. It's got very thorough education on those pillars, which I called earlier, pillars of the root causes of your symptoms, like your inflammation and your immune system and the histamine and the nutrients, nutrition, how to formulate your holistic treatment plan, products, so on and so forth. So if they wanted to DIY it, they could. However, there's always support from me. So yeah, you get the one-on-one support, you get weekly small group support, and you get lifetime access to all of this, all of these resources, which is always being upgraded and new content's always dropping. So yeah, that's how I find that is the best way that I can service my endo patients, serve my endo patients, because it is so complex and they need a bit of everything. They need the education. They need multiple opportunities to check in. They need the one-on-one support. And with everything constantly changing and research developing, things are changing all the time.
Definitely. No, that's great that you do that. And what are the mistakes that you frequently see people do when they try to do it on their own?
Oh, so if you've watched my masterclass, this is actually part of what, so I have a free masterclass also, if anyone's interested in. This is what I talk about, the three biggest mistakes that I see people make when they're trying to manage endo. And the first one is focusing solely on pain relief. Now, there's nothing wrong with focusing on pain relief, but if you're focusing on just putting out the fire constantly, you're going to miss what's going on. Like, why is it on fire? So what's going on in the background? How is this healing going to happen if we're just focusing on solely on pain relief? So conventional medicine is very good at focusing solely on pain relief, but then we lose sight of what's actually going on. What's contributing to the pathophysiology? What's driving the disease progression? The second one is not addressing the underlying hormonal imbalances that could be occurring. So when we, and I mentioned this earlier, when we take something like the birth control pill, the goal is to suppress our menstrual cycles. We have these fluctuations in our hormones through our menstrual cycles, which can drive our symptoms. So we're just flatlining everything without addressing, you know, how are we clearing estrogen? Are we making enough progesterone? Are we fluctuating? How is our estrogen being broken down? Are we converting it properly? Is our bowel eliminating? What's happening in that luteal phase? Do we have enough progesterone? None of this is being addressed. And again, it's not your fault if you have been given the oral contraceptive pill. I was on the pill from about 14, so I get it. And then the third one is not having a long-term holistic management plan. Because after surgery, I highly encourage, like, obviously you don't have to do anything, but you should definitely be looking into ways that you can prevent recurrence, disease recurrence. And although we can't prove exactly what causes the disease, we can do the things that we know, are going to hinder the pathways that we know will result in excess estrogen accumulation, toxicity exposure, and all those things, endocrine disruption. So
beauty care products and all that.
Focusing solely on pain, not addressing the underlying hormonal imbalances. And thirdly, after surgery, not having a long-term holistic management plan, because you're in this for the long run, unfortunately. Just because you hit menopause and you stop bleeding does not necessarily mean endo is going to go away. That's another thing. It really requires a whole lifestyle mindset shift. And my life has changed so much, and I get it. You know, it's hard to sacrifice the things if life has kind of gone a certain way and you've been doing certain things and habits are ingrained and, you know, you like eating a certain way and you like moving a certain way this has kept you stuck in a cycle of like just trying to put out the fire and focus solely on pain relief and suppression and surgery and repeat surgery, then something has to change. So yeah, that's why I say surgery is your turning point, not your endpoint, and you need a holistic long-term management plan for after surgery. That's just the reality. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Like I said, you don't have to do it, but if you want that, you know, individualized holistic approach, then yeah, you need to look at all these things.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that quote that if you want to be something you've never been before, you'll have to start doing things you've never done before, right?
That's right.
Especially that and healing means
and healing can be unfamiliar and scary in that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Especially because sometimes it can throw you out of entire like friend groups who just want to drink or go out and eat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It's tough. It's tough. You sign up for a lot when you choose yourself, but in the end, it's always worth it, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. What's as we kind of wrap up this conversation together, and thanks for sticking through it. I know you're recovering from a cold, but for everybody listening, that's what the little coughs are. But when you have a really, like, do you have just one success story that, you know, kind of just makes you think, like, if you were to die today, that you felt successful in helping in this kind of, you know, niche, the special niche, what would that
be? I don't have just one. I have, you know, many come to mind, but, you know, I have a patient who has multiple endometriomas that we have managed to shrink. I'm not saying we have the formula to shrink an endometrioma. There is nothing that has been proven to shrink the endometrioma. And, you know, with such a multifaceted approach, we don't know what it was that helped to get these endometriomas. And they're basically chocolate cysts, like endometriosis cysts. Don't know what it was. That's part of her very thorough, comprehensive protocol that has helped to shrink it. Mm-hmm. But she's opted out of surgery and has gone down the naturopathic route. And we've been able to significantly reduce pain. You know, it was like 10 out of 10 pain during periods. She's able to travel internationally, walk like 20,000 steps a day during her period on a recent trip, like massive, significant changes. Amazing stories of conception, which has been really, really cool. And yeah, I love the conception story. So, oh yeah, this one's a story about a woman with one of, you know how I mentioned before, adenomyosis. Patients sometimes don't go on to get lap surgery to see if they have endo as well, but they have confirmed adeno. So geriatric, I hate the word geriatric pregnancy.
I know.
39 years old, trying to conceive, has adenomyosis, partner was, I think, 15 years older than her. And he has, he had very poor sperm quality, big smoker, big drinker, very stressed, very fast paced lifestyle, very busy couple. And yeah, she's just recently had her little boy. So that's been, that's always a heart. It's always warms my heart. And it just goes to show, like, the work that we do is really powerful. So
absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean,
so many people underestimate it.
Yeah. And look, I see some amazing cases as well of supporting people through like IVF or assisted reproductive technology, which has resulted in, you know, babies also. So I have another patient who recently became pregnant. We supported her through her IVF journey, which was super cool. Another like geriatric pregnancy, which again, I hate that word, but yeah. So lots of really awesome. Cool stories. And I am super grateful that I get to be a part of it. It's really such an honor, you know, to be able to journey alongside, to be trusted and to assist.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. One of my friends up in Portland is doing IVF, and they've now apparently decided to start calling it elderly instead of geriatric. And I'm like, I don't think that's better.
No, that's not better.
Oh, like elderly. I was like, what?
Yeah.
It's weird. She's also 39. So
dear.
I remember her texting me that, and I was like, is that for real?
But
maybe they should just call it like mature pregnancy or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's amazing. I'm so grateful that you're out there doing that for women, especially because this experience, like I had said in the beginning, is something that a lot of people don't have a lot of, you know, women's voices around the same age as them kind of discussing this topic in an approachable way. So I think that's amazing. And so I have two last little questions for you to finish.
Okay.
One of the things I wanted to ask was for the women listening who's been like struggling for years and feels defeated, what would you want her to know if you had to say like one little thing?
There is hope and don't give up. You just need to find the right person, right people around you to uplift you. I understand the feeling of feeling defeated, but your body is wired to heal. We need to remove those obstacles so that there is room for healing.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah. And my final question I like to ask everybody who comes onto the podcast, in what way, if any, do you find yourself a wellness rebel?
Oh, a wellness rebel. Gosh, you've really put me on the spot here. How am I a wellness rebel? I don't even know how to answer that question. What's the definition of a wellness rebel?
Well, kind of, you know, going against, I mean, I can even think from our conversation for you, but going against like whatever
the
is
grain.
Like the status quo. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, gosh. In so many ways. I don't think everybody with endo should have surgery. Okay, so that could be a really against the grain thing. Not everyone's the right candidate for surgery. Not all infertility clients require IVF. That's another big thing. Yeah. If you dig deeper, you may not necessarily need IVF. And mm-hmm. I do believe that you can put endo in remission, even though we can't say we cure it. I do believe you can put it into remission. So, yeah, these are, I guess, some rebellious foundations I practice from this rebellious place.
Yes, we share many of those. And I'm glad that you said those from your experience as well.
Yeah. But,
all right. Thank you. What are some ways that people can connect with you and everybody listening? Of course, I'm going to have these in the show notes as well.
Perfect. But, yeah. So I am active on Instagram. You won't find me on the Clock app because I find the Clock app way too overstimulating and
same.
I cannot. Yeah, I don't think that's good for anyone's nervous system. Mm-hmm. But I'm always pumping out good content on Instagram, or I hope it's good content.
That's
useful to you. And you can find me at my handle, which is endonaturopath, or on my website, endonaturopath.com.
Awesome. Amazing. Thank you so much, Kimberly, for taking the time to do this episode. I know so many of my listeners have been eagerly awaiting this one, so I can't wait to share it with everyone.
And
I hope you have a good recovery from your cold.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
Take care.
All right, Rebel, that's another episode in the books. If you're sitting there thinking, oh my God, this actually makes sense now, do me a favor, screenshot this episode, tag me at Kaylee Loren or at Rebel Wellness Podcast on Instagram, and tell me which piece hit different. Your aha moments literally make my entire week. Want more of this energy? Jump on my newsletter where I spill the tea on everything from blood work interpretation to why your cravings aren't a character flaw. It's the unfiltered stuff that would make this episode 3 hours long. So if you want more of that, join our newsletter on my website, coachkales.com. And listen, if this show is becoming your weekly dose of someone finally gets it, please smash that 5-star rating on Spotify, or please drop us a review on Apple Podcast. It helps us grow and expand and share more education with more women like you who need it. You know, it's really important that we support our sisters. Real talk though, disclaimer time, I'm dropping knowledge, not prescriptions. Everything here is educational. I'm not diagnosing, treating, or replacing your healthcare team. Think of me as your research-obsessed bestie who happens to know a lot more about hormones, gut health, and all the good stuff than your hairdresser or that random health guru that you're not quite sure if you should trust her background. Keep questioning the status quo, keep trusting your body's wisdom, and keep showing up for yourself. You're doing better than you think, and I'll be right here cheering you on. Catch you next week.